Chapter 65, The Washing of Words. Jumping downstairs with Spirit under one arm.
Been a very naughty puppy, she has.
Molly shook a finger at Spirit.
Got dust all over your room, she did. So if you think I lied on your bed and had 40 blinks instead of dusting, you'd be very much mistaken, Ed, indeed.
So I will not find my pillow flattened? I asked, as Spirit jumped onto the bottom step. Molly mimed puffing on a clay pipe.
Well,
she began uncertainly before gaining speed,
I know you like it flattered, 'cause you flatter it yourself every night, so I flattered it for you.
I smiled. That was thoughtful. Spirit cantered back up the stairs.
And don't you not go making a ring round the bath what I cleaned when I wasn't not sleeping,
Molly called up, and Spirit snaked her tail. Mr. G stood behind his desk like a shop assistant, hoping to sell me Freddy Wilde's diary, which lay closed on a clean sheet of foolscap paper.
I have been considering the pattern of incineration of this tome, he announced. Perhaps you could rouse yourself to do the same.
I picked the journal up. Both covers have been burned.
On Grice's scale of carbonization, how badly?
4 1/4, I guessed.
And a quarter?
Sidney Grice clipped on his pince-nez and took a closer look.
I will grant you 1/8, he conceded.
And I shall treasure it always, I promised. The edges of all the pages are charred too, and I shall not bore you by putting a figure to that.
I should be fascinated, he told me, since I invented the system not 3 minutes ago.
Then that was hardly a fair question.
On the contrary,
he tossed his head indignantly,
it was not fair at all.
I held Freddy's diary to the light. The page looks a bit oily.
That is one way of describing it.
He hugged himself.
So perhaps you would like to tell me whether the book was open or closed whilst being oxidized.
I leafed carefully through it until I came to the last entry. Mr. G had removed the bookmark. It must have been at least partly open here for the flames to get in.
And lick the recto or right-hand page, but not the verso or left.
What then?
What indeed?
He responded unhelpfully.
Ink acts in two ways. First, it mechanically sticks to a surface, rather as graphite does, but more importantly, as even you must know, it stains the material one is writing upon, most commonly paper. Hence, and you may have observed this, one can rub away a pencil mark, leaving only a pressure indentation, whilst you cannot erase an inked manuscript without abrading the actual fibres. Why, and you probably know the answer to this if you think very hard about it, do we use blotting paper?
To remove excess wet ink before it smudges, I tried. He had a way of making me doubt that even the most patiently correct answer would be foolish, but this response seemed to satisfy him, for he continued with,
And for how long does ink stay wet?
I knew full well that whatever figure I gave would be greeted with scorn and was not going to be entrapped so easily this time. That depends, I said, on various factors. I put my fingers behind my back to count hastily. 6 of which I shall presently enumerate. They include the type of ink, the type of paper, the amount of ink dispensed by the nib, the temperature of the room, and the presence or absence of a breeze.
You seem to have ground to a halt at 5, thank goodness.
Mr. G yawned.
Excuse me.
He covered his mouth.
But you have a gift for making even such an attention-transfixing subject almost unbearably tedious.
What would your answer be, then? I challenged, and braced myself for a stream of figures and mathematical formulae.
If I wish, as I always do, to be precise, I should say somewhere in the region of a few minutes.
Sidney Grice picked up his patent self-filling pen and wrote on a piece of fresh notepaper,
This fine work of calligraphy is intended solely as a sample of pigment.
He blotted and blew on the word.
Is that dry now?
I should say so.
Then do so.
Yes, it is.
Give me your hand.
In marriage? Mr. G fought something down and took hold of me, pressing my palm over the word.
And what do you see?
Ample, in mirror image on the ball of my thumb. I knew better than to ask why he had not used his own hand for the demonstration.
And quite clearly, too,
he remarked with some satisfaction. I rubbed it with my handkerchief. So ink takes longer to dry than you might expect. I licked the handkerchief and rubbed harder.
It takes exactly as long as I anticipated.
My guardian huffed at the very idea of him misjudging anything.
Oh, and you need not worry about washing that off. It is indelible.
Then you must find a solvent.
I am not compelled to do so.
I wonder if it is dry now. I grasped his wrist and pushed his hand onto the ink, surprised by his lack of resistance.
Of course it is.
Mr. G. shrugged at my childish prank, but I was only disappointed to see that the pig, though printed quite clearly on his palm, was written backwards.
Perhaps I shall search for a solvent after all.
He conceded, and handed me his third best magnifying glass.
Scrutinize the verso.
I looked at the left-hand page. About half an inch of the top edge was burned away, and the page beneath discoloured. The last entry was still clearly visible. I hate Steep House and everybody in it. I shall destroy them all. And below that, nothing. The surface has not been abraded, I observed, so nothing has been erased.
I provisionally accept that interpretation. Regard, if you can, the recto.
I held the glass over the top of the page. It is only singed along the rim. I screwed up my eyes. There are some very faint smudges on the first four lines, the lower two of which, I viewed both pages at once, are exactly in line with the previous entry. You don't think...
Do I not?
He pouted.
I thought I did.
So if the book were closed too soon, the two top lines could be a blotting of the missing words. I hurried to the window and held the book up, but there was nothing other than the faintest of meaningless marks. If it were pencil, we could do a rubbing, I said disconsolately. Sidney Grice titivated his eyebrows.
In what colour was this otherwise tiresome juvenile chronicle inscribed?
I would think it was violet originally. I gave him back his magnifying glass, and he polished it vigorously on his elbow. Though it is turning brown now.
Would you violently disagree with me and storm out of our home, never to return, if I suggested that originally it might have been purple-brown?
He asked meekly. You said our, not my, and home, not house. Mr. G. blinked.
I heard myself.
You said our home.
I am glad to find you paying such close attention to my words.
He retied his patch.
Though your repetition of them might irritate a man not blessed with my saintly patience, and I think it only fair to inform you that the deeds of this property are in my name.
I know that. I wanted to lean across the desk and kiss the tip of his elegant nose, but I only said, purple-brown sounds about right to me.
Thank heavens we navigated that emotional crisis without being cautioned for a fray,
he said. But why would I have argued about it?
You argued about the colour of the drapes in the sitting-room.
I remembered cuddling up to George Pound on the sofa up there, and resolved to tackle my guardian on the subject later. For now, I satisfied myself with, only because you wanted to change them for black ones.
Charcoal,
he insisted before resuming his tutorial.
Purple-brown inks are sold under the description of iron gall. They contain, amongst other ingredients, ferrous sulphate, not to be confused with ferric sulphate, which is used as a mordant to fix dyes, rather than a dye in its own right. A pertinent property of ferrous sulphate is its reaction with sodium carbonate, vulgarly known as washing soda or soda ash, of which I have a bottle here.
He withdrew an unlabeled green bottle, which he had lodged in the mummified claw of Ecreal Coy, the aspic killer of Merthyr Tydvil.
The resultant exchange of molecules results in the creation of sodium sulphate, and, more relevantly, ferrous carbonate, a precipitate and a serviceable sepia pigment.
He unscrewed the cap and inhaled, though even I know it has no aroma.
So if I apply this over these marks, I may be able to darken them enough to be legible.
But if the ink should be made of another chemical, what will the soda do?
There is a chance that it will do what it is purchased in vast quantities to do, and remove the stains.
Mr. G told me lightly, and, before I could object that he might try to think of another means, commanded me,
"Seek and find the 19th of January, then seek and find the inscription skating."
I did as I was bade, and the word sprang immediately, darker and clearer than the preceding "we went" and the succeeding "on the pond."
"You tested it," I realized.
"I am not quite the simpleton you portray in your published accounts,"
he declared with a toss of his thick, black, back-swept hair.
"But I have always emphasized your cleverness," I protested.
"A performing flea may be described as clever."
He took the book back from me and I sniffed. "I shall try to do you justice in future."
"You will fail," he predicted. "Pay close attention, for there is a chance that it will be washed away, and there are occasions when three eyes are better than one."
Sidney Grice dipped a flat brush into the soda solution, wiping the excess liquid off on the neck of the bottle, and painted it sparingly over the top third of the last page. Nothing much happened. He re-wet the bristles and tried again, and this time the effect was instant.
"Your head is in the way," I complained.
"My head is where it always is," he snapped, "firmly though not rigidly attached to my first cervical vertebra."
Nonetheless, he edged to the side. And, reading right to left, we narrated in unison, "He told me, I hate Steep House and everybody in it. I shall destroy them all."
So that was why Eric was in the cellar, I realized.
The pigment was watery and starting to trickle down the page.
"I find myself ill-equipped to refute your premise."
Sidney Grice tried to blot the words, but they had already floated away.